This is news from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Zoe Rome. Post-workout recovery is a strange world of ice baths, float tanks, and foam rollers, and even infrared pajamas. Christy Ashwanden is the author of Good to Go, What the Athlete in All of Us Can Learn from the Strange Science of Recovery. Her new book dives into the science and pseudoscience behind athletic recovery. Hi, Christy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, what exactly is recovery?
When I started researching the book, the first thing I set out to do was say, okay, I'm just going to find, you know, the most basic definition of recovery and really pin this down. And it turns out that it's really multifaceted. I mean, at its most basic level, it's like all the things that need to happen in your body to allow it to be good to go from one bout of exercise to the other so that, you know, you do a workout or you do some exercise and you get sore or tired. And it's all the things that need to happen in your body, you know, to replenish itself so that you have the energy and sort of the feeling in your muscles again to be able to exercise hard again. But when I started looking into the physiology, I found that there wasn't one or two or even three things that defined it, that it has so many different facets to it. In fact, one of the surprises to me was that there's a really strong psychological component to it. And what I mean by that is to your body, stress is stress, whether it's coming from the stress of your exercise and your training or from just the ordinary things in our lives that we generally call stress, whether it's, you know, things at work, things at home, the things that are stressing us out. And that those are things that really need to be addressed for an athlete to really recover optimally.
You spend a lot of the book debunking some popular recovery methods and show that there's a surprising lack of scientific support for things like ice baths or compression pants. How did these methods, which don't have a lot of evidence that they're all that effective, become so popular?
Yeah, so it turns out that so many of the things that we do in sport are really sort of based on tradition and things that, you know, people have done in the past, or you do something and it seems to work and you keep going. And in the first chapter of the book, the first chapter is actually about beer and running. But in that chapter, I talk about an experiment that I did trying to understand the relationship between beer and exercise. I was really trying to answer this burning question, which is beer the perfect recovery beverage? But what I found doing that study and looking into the science is that it's really easy to get some scientific results or to get some evidence that looks kind of promising, but then all of a sudden we build up these stories around that little shred of evidence and turn it into something much bigger than what we really have. And so what I mean by that is we have a tiny bit of evidence that something might be the case. So in the case of my beer study, it looked like beer was performance enhancing for women and a detrimental to men, which, you know, I have to say as a woman married to a man, that was very appealing because it meant I might have a designated driver and all that. But it turned out that after taking a closer look at our results, I realized that there was a lot of uncertainty surrounding them. And so even though it was very easy for me and my fellow researchers to come up with a very enticing story to explain these results, and we could have easily sort of made this become the new thing, I knew that there was a lot of uncertainty there. And so I really tried to back away from that. But what happens so often with a lot of these products and these things that are put under study is we have a small study that turns up some preliminary evidence. It's really enticing, and people just run with it before the results are really solid yet and before, you know, the full story is really in.
So what was the strangest thing that you tried while researching this book?
I would have to say cryotherapy, and this is something where you're basically standing naked in a steel drum, and they release liquid nitrogen, which is very cold. It basically feels like standing naked in a blizzard, which, you know, around here you can do without paying, you know, the $50 or $100 to do it. And the idea here, well, the place that I went to made a lot of claims about this, about super oxygenating the blood, but the basic premise is that you're causing the body to shunt all the blood to your core, so you're reducing circulation in your extremities, and this is supposed to pull out sort of all the bad things in your muscles that happen after exercise, and the idea is that it might reduce soreness. But it turned out that there was no evidence that I could find to show that this really helped with muscle soreness or helped with recovery in general. But I will say it did make me feel like ready to go kick some butt. It was really quite an adrenaline rush, like you might feel if you sort of jumped in the snow and made a snow angel while naked.
One recovery method in your book that stood out as being really, truly effective was sleep. Why is sleep so important?
Yeah, I mean, that's really sleep is our body's natural way of recuperating. I mean, it's during this time, all of these things are happening in your body. Some of your hormone levels spike, so things like human growth hormone, testosterone, rise during sleep. These are things that help you facilitate some of the repair mechanisms in muscles and other tissues. It's also a time when some of the metabolites of normal everyday living are flushed out of your brain. So there's really interesting research now going on showing that sleep is very important for learning. And this is something that can play a role in sports and in activities where there's some sort of psychological or learning component or skill that you need to have. And so sleep is just really when all of the magic happens. I mean, to the extent that there is a magic formula for recovery, sleep is it.
One thing that really struck me reading your book was that a lot of these recovery methods, whether it's stretching or massage, do work in the sense that they make you feel better, even if they don't help you actually recover any faster. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. One of the things I sort of learned is that a lot of what needs to happen for recovery to occur is just time. I mean, it's a lot of waiting. Our bodies are actually really good at recovering. We just need to give them the tools that they need, which is, you know, actual relaxation and rest. And so it turns out that a lot of the things that we do that actually work or they feel like they're working are not working by some of the scientific or pseudoscientific explanations that are given where, you know, people talk about. So, for instance, one of the most common claims that I found, a claim that these things would flush the blood and reduce lactic acid in the muscles. The idea is you're flushing lactic acid out of your muscles, and this is going to reduce soreness. But it turns out that lactic acid is not what makes your muscles sore. And furthermore, our muscles are actually very good. Our bodies are very good at clearing it quite quickly after exercise. So by the time you're doing one of these things, that lactic acid is probably already gone. But it turns out that a lot of the things that are making these claims actually do work in the sense that they help you relax. And that, you know, at its most basic level, that's what recovery is. It's relaxation, it's recuperation, it's resting. And so, you know, one example is these pneumatic compression boots, which are very popular. I tried them out, and I have to say I really enjoyed them. It sort of felt like a nice massage. But I think that the reason they work and the way that they work is they make you put your feet up for half an hour and, you know, kick back and relax and unwind and unplug from all the other things going on in your life. So even though some of these claims being made don't stand up, at the end of the day, they may really actually work for recovery.
As a side note, my new favorite recovery thing is making lasagna because it just makes me hang out for a couple hours and sit tight while my food cooks.
I love it. I love it. That's a really great example. And, you know, I found that some of the things that I talk about in the book, I've had a few things. Floating is one of them. This is where they used to be called sensory deprivation chambers. Now it's called floating. You basically shut yourself into a little pod with a tiny bit of very salty water that makes your body buoyant. And you sort of meditate in this quiet, dark place. And I really enjoyed this. I didn't expect to, but I've had people say, oh, okay, so now I know that the secret recovery tool is floating. And it's like, no, like this worked for me. And it's something that I find very relaxing, but that doesn't mean it will work for you. And the way that it's working and the reason it's working is because it's helping me relax. And so I think the key here is for every person to find that special thing for them. And it may not be the same thing for everyone.
So how can we as athletes or consumers suss out what's really working and what's overhyped?
I'm glad you asked because it turns out it's really hard. I wish that I could just give you like three simple rules, but I'd say there really aren't any. I'll back up and say there are a few sort of general guidelines. One is that, you know, before you take a claim at its face value, you want to know a little bit about what's behind that claim. You know, is this a large body of evidence? Is it just a single study? Is it a small study that was sponsored by the manufacturer of this device or this product? Those sorts of things are more suspect than independent studies. But the other thing that I would say is that most of the studies in this field are quite small, and so it's really hard to get definitive answers from just a couple of studies. So you really need quite a body of evidence to know. So I would say that whenever you hear about something that's totally new and something that's just starting to be studied, I'd be a little bit skeptical at first or sort of give it time to see if it really pans out because, you know, the history of this stuff is that it's just littered with examples of things that looked really promising early on, but with further studies And more research, it turns out, weren't nearly as powerful as they seemed on the first study.
All right. Thanks, Christy.
Thank you so much.
That was Christy Ashwanden, author of Good to Go. She speaks tonight as part of the Aspen U Speaker Series at the Limelight Hotel.